Oh hey, it's Dave Hill, and this week on The Novelizers, from Search Party, Hallie Haas, from Netflix's Leanne, Hannah Pilkus, plus writer Mickey Cathers. You're going to want to be sitting down for this one, just like me, Dave, mentioned earlier. Welcome to The Novelizers. We have an astoundingly good show for you today.
It's too good. This sometimes, you know, we want to aim for that like real sweet spot. This time we overshot it and it's too good, but
I'm enraged by how good it is.
It's a shame. Hey, we'll try next time. Anyway, once again, we are here, Dave Hill, me, Stephen Levinson. We're here novelizing the film The Dark Knight, which means we give TV comedy writers a chance to turn it into an audiobook narrated by our favorite comedians and celebrities. And where are we in the story, Dave?
I'm glad you asked, Stephen Levinson. This time around, Wayne Enterprises and Lau agree to a joint venture. Bruce asks Fox for a new suit. Bruce runs into Rachel and Harvey and has dinner with them. Harvey is pro-Batman, but believes that someone will need to rise to take over Batman's mantle.
Not on my watch, or not on Batman's watch.
Right.
Yeah. Helping us novelize this show this week, who do we have? Tell us about our...
Don't even get me started. Hallie Haas is a comedian and actor who has appeared in Search Party and the film Fort Tilden. Hannah Pilkus is a comedian and improv teacher who appears in the show Leanne on Netflix and has performed at Just for Laughs, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and the Telluride Comedy Festival, among others. Also, Mickey Cathers is a comedy writer and former editor of the illustrious Michigan Gargoyle Humor Magazine. So there.
Hallie Haas, novelize us.
Chapter 4, Table for Four, Shadowing. Novelized by Mickey Cathers, narrated by Hallie Haas. In China, Lao Security Investments stands for Dynamic New Growth, Mr. Lau said to the window, gazing out at Gotham City's bustling downtown. He refused to look at Wayne Enterprises' board of trustees to his left. He knew if he looked, he would have lost his nerve and never got that line out. He'd been practicing that line all the way from the airport, in the hotel room, in the Uber, and in the elevator of Penn Center 4. He liked the way it sounded. Dynamic new growth. It sounded strong. It sounded manly. It had the word dynamic in it. No one would even realize it meant nothing. Thanks so much, Mr. Lau. That was a great speech, really. Lucius Fox shook Lau's hand and deftly turned him to face the board. Lau repeated his mantra internally to maintain his composure. You got this. You are strong. You are smart. You are dynamic. The board is grateful you could be here today, Fox said. And that's when they both noticed that Bruce Wayne, 15-year-old orphaned multi-billionaire and head of the board, was passed out cold in his Eames lounge chair, lightly snoring. Both men had the same thought at the exact same time. I don't get paid enough for this. After Fox escorted Lau to the elevators and the rest of the board had gone back to their tea times, he returned to the boardroom to find that Bruce was awake, leaning against the back of his power chair, as he often liked to call it. So, Lau Security Investment sounds like a solid deal, but I've asked Reese to rerun the numbers, said Fox as he joined the kid. I just think their earnings sound too good to be true. That's okay, you can cancel the deal, it's all good, said Bruce, playing with a fidget spinner, his floppy black hair in his face. Well now, sir, I'm not sure. Fox stopped himself, thrusting his hands in his pockets. I'm just urging caution with such a large merger as this one. Fox liked Bruce in general, but talking to the kid was sometimes difficult. He'd always been sheltered, had to grow up fast, had no friends his own age, and while bright, was still a child in an adult's world. No problem. I heard that guy's big yikes. We don't need him, Bruce said. He stood up straight and, dropping his fidget spinner on the table, pulled some crumpled paper out of his back pocket. Now what I do need, though, is a new suit. Fox kept his mouth shut, afraid he knew exactly where this was going. Crap, 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 not this again. Bruce blushed a little as he handed Fox the much-folded piece of paper. Fox cautiously unfolded it, noting the hair's potato chip grease stains all over it. He gazed at the rough Sharpie drawings of a Batman suit with swivel lines drawn aggressively around the neck portion. "You drew these?" Fox asked, looking up at Bruce, who nodded enthusiastically. "Well, I must say, sir, you have really progressed with your sketches. This is good. This is really good. And this part?" Fox pointed at the swivel lines. "This is so you can turn your head, right?" Fox wondered when Bruce might give up this odd obsession with the Batman. I mean, it was one Halloween costume. Come on, man. But judging by these drawings, it wouldn't be anytime soon. For years now, Bruce had been asking Fox to make self-driving cars and non-lethal weapons, wearing these black leather suits with pointed ears, inventing his own form of karate. And it wasn't going to be Lucius Fox who told him to knock it off. "Yeah, the last version you made is fire, but it's hard to turn my head and see what's behind me. The leather is so thick," Bruce said, smiling. Fox nodded at the boy. He just didn't know what else to do and said, "Of course, sir. I'll get right on it." That evening, Rachel Dawes met her boyfriend Harvey at an intimate, crowded French restaurant in Center City. As they sat at their wicker and glass table, Harvey commented, "Took me 3 weeks to get a reservation here." "Really?" asked Rachel, pushing her brunette hair behind her ear as she picked up the menu. She'd been to Park a couple times. It was a nice restaurant, sure, the kind of fashionable place that charges $40 for a wedge of lettuce and calls French fries pommes frites. The cocktails were nice, she remembered, but she was pretty sure it was a chain and it wouldn't take 3 weeks to get a reservation.
"And I had to tell them I knew Jason Kelsey," he continued, grinning at her with his very white teeth.
"Did you know?" asked Rachel in a thick Midwestern accent. Uh-oh, she thought. She knew she tended to go Midwestern when she was feeling salty. It had started as a fun game she used to play with her brother as a kid. They had watched Fargo a million times, annoying their parents with their best imitations of a North Dakota accent. Rachel told herself to be nice. "Harvey's probably nervous. Give him a break. He might not be the brightest bulb on the tree, but he's still a good guy."
"Rachel!" Bruce yelled. "No way!"
Rachel looked up from her menu to see Bruce Wayne, that rich kid she used to babysit years ago, the awkward one with the crush on her, walking toward their table. Behind him trailed a tall young woman with slicked back hair wearing a tight black dress, perfectly balanced on 3-inch heels. She reminded Rachel of someone, something familiar. What was that? Bruce stood in front of Rachel, smiling big as if no one else was in the restaurant. "Oof-da," Rachel said. Bruce introduced his date, Natasha, to Rachel, as Rachel worked her attitude into something more gracious. She put on a smile. She'd figured out where she recognized Natasha from and said, "Natasha, are you?"
"Robert Palmer's dancer!"
Bruce finished her sentence excitedly.
"Well, the tribute band, you know. Natasha slays. Doesn't she look exactly like the original video?"
Rachel agreed, recalling that Bruce had a thing for classic rock ever since she played her old CDs while babysitting him. She heard a little cough and realized Harvey was still sitting there at the table.
"Bruce, have you met Harvey Dent, my boyfriend boss?"
Harvey shot out his hand to shake Bruce's.
"So nice to meet you, Bruce. Rachel's told me all about you."
Bruce smiled at Harvey.
"She probably told you I've got tons of riz."
"I don't know what that is," said Harvey, "but I don't like the sound of it."
Harvey looked at Rachel, who shrugged her shoulders as if to say, "Don't ask me."
Hey, let's have dinner, all four of us. We'll put two tables together," exclaimed Bruce.
"Oh, they probably don't let you do that in here. There's no room. All the tables are awkward. It's a really nice restaurant. I don't think we should bother him," Harvey rambled.
"They'll let us do it. I own this, John," Bruce said as he nodded to the manager. "I'm, like, really rich."
All four guests enjoyed their meals that evening, starting with the bouillabaisse and salads of charred endive, and then moved on to enjoy a perfectly grilled sea bass, delectable duck à l'orange, melt-in-your-mouth Moroccan lamb, and chicken fingers. To drink, champagne cocktails to start, and during dinner, a beautiful red from the Bordeaux region, and a Coke.
Not to be rude, but I'll be glad when our Robert Palmer addicted to loving the 80s tour is over and we can leave this town, said Natasha over her cracked vanilla bean creme brulee. It's not the worst, is it? Bruce asked, digging into the bottom of his Ben & Jerry's fish food from the local Wawa. There were perks to owning a restaurant, turns out.
What I mean is that it's weird there's this guy who dresses in a Halloween costume running around acting like a masked vigilante. It's weird.
Natasha looked at Rachel imploringly as if to say, back me up here, girl. But Rachel had just taken a bite of her profiteroles, and not only was her mouth full, these were the most incredible pastries she'd ever had, and she kind of just wanted to be alone with her dessert right now.
I think Gotham City is proud that an ordinary Joe is standing up to crime, said Harvey, who had already finished his pineapple sorbet. He was feeling pretty full and was trying to figure out how to unbutton his pants without anyone noticing.
A city needs elected officials like you, Harvey, not someone who thinks they're above the law, said Natasha.
Right, yelled Bruce. No one voted for the Batman.
Rachel looked up as she finished licking the chocolate syrup from her dessert plate. Well, Natasha, this town can be pretty rough in some areas. Too much for City Hall to handle on their own, Rachel offered.
There are parts of town where I wouldn't get out of my car for a hoagie. No way, Harvey added. I'd just drive right past that deli and buy a hoagie somewhere else.
Well, that's a skibbity-doo, said Bruce.
Rachel and Harvey exchanged looks over the table.
What the fuck does that mean?
You don't know?
I don't know either. Let's pretend we didn't hear it.
Okay, good plan. Let me tell you kids a story, Harvey started as he leaned forward. God, that button's gonna pop on its own. I'm so full. The ancient Japanese worshipped wolves. The wolves were thought of as gods, not animals. When their enemies were at the gates, the townspeople would elect one person to dress up in a wolf pelt, run around on all fours, howl a bit, and hopefully scare off people who can't tell what a real wolf sounds like.
Harvey sat back in his chair, hearing an odd tearing sound and feeling grateful that that wasn't his pants, but this woven bamboo chair ripping.
It wasn't considered an honor. It was a service. And I think that's how Batman feels too.
Bruce was nodding enthusiastically as Natasha lifted one brow and crossed her arms. Harvey, is that true? Asked Rachel. Harvey Dent was one hell of a district attorney, but she'd never heard him mention a love of Japanese culture or history.
Look, all I'm saying is that it takes a village, or whatever, said Harvey. You either die a hero, or you have a villain origin story where you get hurt in a way that doesn't kill you, but leaves you scarred and obsessed with good and evil and leads to a descent into madness fueled by a desire for revenge and an inability to cope with psychological trauma. That's all I'm saying.
Natasha cocked her head and stared at Harvey. Are you the Batman? Harvey started laughing and took Rachel's hand.
I haven't asked Rachel if she'd be into role-playing, but...
Oh, Harvey, you're not funny, Rachel smiled, hitting him softly on the chest. Bruce put down his empty pint of ice cream and the spoon. He started the slow clap until Natasha, Rachel, and Harvey were all looking at him.
Harvey, I'm gonna throw you a fundraiser.
You're gonna do what now?
Yeah, I'm gonna get you that guap,
said Bruce, nodding gently. Rachel looked at the ceiling as Harvey side-eyed her.
One fundraiser with my pals? You'll never need another cent.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Solid.
Oh man, that was really something. But you know, we're not done yet. Every episode we have an interview with someone who worked on the movie. Like this one is just one example.
Hello, I'm Christine, and I am back with another interview portion of The Novelizers, and today I am speaking with someone who helped with the score of the film, The Dark Knight, and the name of this person makes me ask a question right out of the gate. This is Pons Zimmer. Is that right?
That is right. Hello!
Pons, hello. So great to meet you.
If you can hear me say, op, op.
up, up.
Very good. Good to meet you. Very good to meet you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask right out of the gate, are you related to the Zimmers here?
I am related to Mr. Hans Zimmer. I am a sibling.
You're a sibling of Hans, and your name is Pons.
Yeah, which you can imagine growing up was pretty confusing, you know, because you're upstairs and go, oh, Pons. And then it was, oh, it's Hans, but it's Pons. But, you know, Hans is far superior.
Your brother's far superior.
Yeah, that is kind of the overarching theme, is that Hans is talented and Pons is just along for the ride.
Oh, okay. You're being very self-deprecating. So you're saying the theme, you mean like the theme in your family, or is that just how you feel?
I would say from very early on when Hans was playing with the spoons, which, you know, they later used in the film, and I was nonverbal until I was 9 or 10, we had kind of different upbringings. Yeah. Yeah.
Nonverbal until 9 or 10. That's an interesting start. What caused that?
I think I didn't have the singing voice that Hans had, so I thought, oh, yeah, better not. So, but the good news is we have started to collaborate on some things. Hence the Dark Knight. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So you started. Was this the first film that you collaborated with your brother Hans?
We had, yeah, because I was more in the commercial jingle space. I don't know if you heard 1-877 Cars for Kids. That I did that.
I have heard that, yeah.
I did.
1-877 cars for kids. K. And it's spelled with a K.
K. And I said, let's do K, because K is a very German. You know, you're going to see a lot of K. Klaus.
Yes. Jesus, yes.
Klaus.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I did that. And I was in charge of the Smart and Final jingle. And
one for me? I don't know if I'm familiar.
Smart and Final. That's it. Don't ask for more.
Oh, well, then that's a really catchy jingle, because you don't have to remember very much. And you're remembering just the name. That's what you need to remember.
Because people were asking, what's more? And I said, that's it. It's final.
Yeah, it is final. Wow.
Yeah.
You're like an auteur.
So, yeah, I was more in the commercial space. I was more in the, Hans said, you know, I'm, you know, oh, I hate to see you like this. Because very different in the way of incomes, you know, I mean.
Oh, goodness. Yes, the jingle space and the major Hollywood motion picture blockbuster. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, he was making many, many zeros. And a lot of those jobs I was describing, I was an intern. So I hadn't moved past unpaid intern. I was actually asking to be on these jobs for job experience to build my resume. And all the while hoping, you know, Hans, bring me on. But one day he said, okay, finally. So he brought me on to this.
Okay, that's so exciting. And for a first film, I'm going to tell you, Pons, this is a good one, okay? Because this broke a lot of records in 2008. I mean, this is, especially for the score, to be involved in the score of this film, that's huge. And that's your first, you know, you should be very proud of that.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, once that was on my resume, it was all bets are off. I was off the races.
Amazing. Okay, so first I want to know, what was your actual involvement? So Hans is... he's kind of running the show, and you are working with him when it comes to developing this score. So tell me about your experience.
And so I want to be completely transparent here. My involvement in the score of The Dark Knight, you will not hear, in that it was removed, but I think sometimes what goes wrong is an indication of what goes right. Now, I had provided the lyrics for the score. All of the songs in The Dark Knight had
lyrics. My God, you would never know.
Yeah, instead of instruments, a lot of it was a cappella. So a lot of ominous tones and sounds, and then me kind of coming in with words for emphasis.
Oh my gosh, Pons, I mean, you know I'm going to ask you to do a couple of these lyrics, because we have to know what the original song was.
And so Okay, you know, I pulled up a couple songs. There was one, of course, called Why So Serious? A classic line in the film. And so for the Why So Serious song, initially it was me and they, and I go, oh no, oh no. Why so serious? Better make a smile. You should smile more. You should smile more. Oh, why so serious? 1-877 cars for kids.
Get no, you didn't have that in there.
Well, because they were trying to find product placement, and I thought, let's naturally integrate it into the music. And so, unfortunately, that was cut from that song.
Okay, so I don't know anything about scoring films. I will say I do understand that decision. I don't think that would have worked very well for The Dark Knight, is to then be promoting Cars for Kids, because they're not really connected. I mean, you have me with the Why So Serious. Like, I'm with you, you know, tonally maybe it's not exactly where we are, but I get the connection. The Cars for Kids thing feels like...
Let me ask you this. We'll segment it. We'll get to the Cars for Kids. Don't you love when people say, you should smile more?
Gosh, to be perfectly honest, I haven't ever really liked that so much.
What?
I think women typically don't enjoy that.
What?
It's sort of a pressure to kind of stuff everything down and just pretend to be happy with your circumstance, even if you're not.
This is blowing my mind. This is blowing my mind because...
Okay, but you like it. So if I were to say to you, I see you on the street, hey, smile more. How would you feel?
I would say...
Oh, you're smiling big.
Hey, thanks for the reminder. But, you know, actually, you raise a good point. Many of the women, part of the production, said, get rid of that.
Okay.
They also said, let's use an instrument instead of, no. Which is interesting because I can sustain that note for 2.5 minutes. Would you like to see?
Yes, I would. Yeah, that was, I think it was 7 seconds, but I do, it sounds, for those 7 seconds, it sounded good for at least half of them. I mean,
no,
you lost a little air
like
towards
45,
the end.
45, 50 seconds, at least.
Okay. Yeah, but I also just, I don't want you to feel bad about your work here. Like, you clearly had a huge contribution to this film. So just because the lyrics were cut from that particular song. And was this true of all the songs? Was your job lyrics?
My job was lyrics and kind of adding cool stuff.
And what part of the process were you involved then?
They brought me in. Well, Hans, I wouldn't say Hans brought me in on official terms, but I was kind of waiting outside the trailer going, hey, Hans, hey, remember me? It's your brother. It's your brother. And he said, okay, come in. And then he said to the crew, please just humor him. Please just humor him and let him do whatever he wants to do. And so then I said, oh, finally. And that's when I said, okay, I've got a lot of ideas. And I scrolled out my scroll. My scroll went down 4 city blocks because
You had one of those actual unroll scrolls. That's pretty cool. And it was all of the ideas for lyrics for the songs of The Dark Knight. So you had put a lot of work into this before he even said, humor him.
Yeah, I had said, you know, I was waiting. I was writing on the PBS show Zoom. Send it to Zoom.
I've never heard of it. That's exciting. So it's a kid's show.
Yeah, it's for tweens. It's for tweens to get into science experiments and learn about themselves. So I was on the Zoom show. So I thought, and on Zoom, we're doing a lot of cool stuff. We're putting baking soda with vinegar. We're making volcanoes. So I thought, okay, you know, Dark Knight, kind of dark undertones, right? Kind of spooky, spooky. So if I add some cool stuff in, maybe then we can invite the kids market in. 1-877 cars for kids.
Yeah, but just to stop you on that, because you keep going back to the cars for kids thing. That is, isn't that like a donation? Like, you donate your car and then the money like that goes that you of the car goes to help kids?
Well, so contrary to popular belief, 1-877 cars for kids. The way that 1-877 cars for kids works is there's two kids. One gets a car, depending who they fight each other, and whoever is strong guy, then they get the car, but only on Tuesdays.
Wow. I really misinterpreted what Cars for Kids was. So you have a very different perspective on that organization. I trust that you're accurate because you did the jingle.
I did the jingle and I wrote the phone number and I said, let's swap out the C for the K. And
The German influence.
And if a kid wants to get the car, they have to spell car with a K. And if they do it with a C, then we kill them.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
So let's keep on.
Oh, okay. Let's get back into the Dark Knight stuff. So
absolutely,
you did work on the score. You would do the lyrics because your brother Hans sort of said, "Let's humor him. Let's bring him onto the film, onto the set, and kind of see what he can do." And ultimately, everything that, if I'm understanding this correct, everything that you did was cut. Do you feel like there's any contribution you made that is lasting, that would be something we would perceive as a viewer or watcher of the film, The Dark Knight?
Well, and this is interesting. If you listen very closely to the song A Dark Knight, which very self-referential, very fun, very meta, very title within a title within a title. So if you listen at the very, very end, very, very faint, very, very small, you can hear me do this from the show Doug. I go, chicka-pa-pa, chicka-pa-chicka-pa-pa.
Wow. I do remember that from the soundtrack from the theme song of Doug. You did that and it stays in the score?
Larry. And contrary to popular belief, that's not sounds. That's me saying chicken pot pie, chicken pot, chicken pot pie.
Pie. Do we hear it while watching the film, or is this only something we would hear if we were listening to the soundtrack? And like, is there a moment? What's going on screen when I hear so faintly?
When you hear do you know the movie or the book Polar Express?
Where yes, I do. Yeah, I read it to my kids. Yeah. Only they can hear the babble, but the grown-ups can't.
Yes, only kids can hear this.
Puns.
Only kids under 5, which raised the problem because they said kids under 5 shouldn't be watching The Dark Knight.
Yeah, well, actually, I was watching it last night to just kind of refresh before I started interviewing people about the film for this podcast. And I have a 4-year-old. She's going to turn 5 next week. And after this morning, she said, "Mommy, I heard you watching a movie last night." And I said, "Yeah, we were watching a movie." And she said, "Can I watch it?" And I said, "I think it's a little advanced for you. But what you're telling me is that if she really wants to kind of pick up on some things that maybe other people, grown-ups like myself, wouldn't be able to, I should plop her down in front of it and turn it on."
I think one of the best things that my sister did for me growing up was when I was 4 years old, she showed me Requiem for a Dream. Very quick, I grew up. You know, I saw it. Sometimes I think maybe you better see things you shouldn't see. Now, let me ask you this. Is your kid in the market for a car?
No, not. She doesn't have the ability to buy a car because she's 4. So she can't purchase a car.
Can we bring her out and have her spell cars for kids and just see? Yeah.
She's at daycare right now. So if I told her how to spell it, she would be able to spell it the way I tell her how to spell it.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, have her, I'm going to give you my business card and give it to your daughter. And I would only want to correspond with her from now on. Probably
she can't read. Yeah. She can't read.
All right.
Hans, okay, I want to get, I, so, sorry, I called you Hans. Has that ever happened? Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to.
There is one trigger for me, and that is when you call Hans Zimmer. Mm-hmm. Hans Zimmer.
Zimmer, I'm so sorry. It was truly just a slip. I was thinking of the movie and Zimmer, and I really apologize. Can you elaborate on why that's so hard for you?
I just have to do a quick coping skill. Do, a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun. I'm back, sorry.
Okay, I liked that, by the way.
Okay, why is it so activating?
Yeah.
Because my first wife, Gevele Gom von Domp.
Oh. Can I try to say that?
Yes.
Gevele Gom von Domp?
What? Oh my goodness. Have you been to Bavaria, Germany?
No, but I just think it's such a cool name. I wanted to see if I said it right.
My wife's name is Gevele Gom von Domp. That's what I said before. Don't rewind. The reason that it is so activating for me, Hans Zimmer, to be called Hans Zimmer, is because my wife, and you already remember her name, I don't need to say it again. During sex, I said it, she would always be calling me Hans, which is how I learned they had been carrying on affair for 19 years.
19 years, my God. How long had you been married at the time?
24.
Wow, that's the majority of your marriage at that point, by a lot. I'm so sorry. What happened when you did find out? Did you separate?
After I found out that my wife was cheating on me with Hans Zimmer, we went into couples therapy. Mm-hmm. But the difficult thing was the therapist insisted on playing music to relax us. And why don't you guess which music was playing?
Wouldn't you know it was Hans Zimmer music was playing.
Hans Zimmer with all my parts cut out.
Oh, it's even more triggering because right there in the therapy session, you're experiencing a kind of erasing of you in lieu of, you know, showcasing and highlighting your brother Hans.
Yeah, and they could have given me the common courtesy of playing the one with me in it, because another song that I had put something very cool in,
you have to
listen so close to hear it. You have to get really good, get up close. In the song, In the Dark Night, Why So Serious? You can hear me from the Cry Me a River music video going,
did you do that in the Cry Me a River music video, or did you just like that and you wanted to apply it?
They kept that in. I did that.
Wow. That's amazing.
I did that.
In that case, you've had a pretty prolific career. I mean, I know it sounded like you had a complex that you were doing more jingles and your brother Hans was, you know, dominating the blockbuster kind of entire blockbuster world when it comes to scoring movies. But you have also had what would be considered a very like successful career of creating music and working in the music industry, the score industry. Yep. You should be very proud of yourself, Pons.
Okay. I don't know that anyone in my entire life, not my Mama Goes, not my Papa Bonks, not my sister Jonsin, not my other sister Tineke, not my other brother Gondrik, not my other brother Bomps, has ever said to me, you, Pons Zimmer, should be proud of yourself.
Oh my gosh. Well,
what I'm experiencing now is something that's coming through my eyes that I never felt before.
Those are tears.
It feels a little bit like a rainstorm and a tsunami kind of coming. Life comes at you fast.
Yes, it does. And that's just emotion. That's normal human emotion. You should absolutely allow yourself to experience it. It's healthy to cry. And I'm sorry if it's painful, but I also think it's really good for you to get this out.
I pushed it down. It is the German way.
Oh, you just did?
Yeah, I pushed it on down.
Just now, just like
I
that.
I pushed down the tears and I swallowed them. And
swallowed
that's all the water that I need. That's how Germans drink water. We don't cry. We push it down and go.
And that's enough hydration for you.
And that's enough hydration for me. So.
Okay. So we've learned a little bit about your career, your, I guess, former marriage. Where are you right now? What is your life like? What's an average day in the life of Pons Zimmer?
Well, funny you should ask. I just launched a YouTube channel. I'm doing the RV life. So I'm traveling down the West Coast. I'm going to Death Valley. I'm going to the Arches. I'm going to Zion. And I'm really just trying to live my life and practice mindfulness. And you know what? Not allowed here? Music. I'm traveling in silence. I don't like music, and I'm never going to listen to music again because music hurt me.
Look at this, though. I have to say something. You were just saying you were experiencing crying and emotion for the first time, but I think you actually are a lot more aware of how your life experience has been painful for you than maybe you're open to admitting.
I will say, to connect to myself, I really been trying. I've been reading Brené Brown. I've been reading The Body Keeps the Score.
Yes.
And I've been listening to Joe Rogan.
Oh, okay. The other two I kind of...
More.
Oh, is that something Joe says?
Yeah, I love that guy.
What do you love about him?
What I love about Joe Rogan is he's a real God guy. He's a real...
A real what guy?
He's a real God guy.
A real guy's guy. A real guy's and guy.
He's trying to teach... He said... He has this YouTube video. He says, if you want to have the life that you want, you can't be sleeping till 8 a.m. You got to get up at 4 and you got to drink that whey protein with 9 eggs. Then you got to be hitting up that gym and be doing squats with kettlebells. And if you don't do that, you can't complain about the life that you don't have.
Do you do those things?
Every morning. But then I'm looking for Brené Brown and there's a real, I feel so caught between poles.
I have to say, I don't think the two of them are really preaching the same message.
Well, I'm all about duality.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, you can see the different colors in this world and you're open to different perspectives. That's really valuable. That's how you can kind of find the path that is most suited for you.
And I don't know if I mentioned that we are actually fraternal twins, me and Hans. So duality is actually inherently a part of me. And kind of like E.T. syndrome, when Hans is doing something like Elliot and E.T., I can feel that.
So, I was just going to ask, do you have that sort of twin thing, that sensibility or that sense?
Yes, because right now, I'm saying Pon Zimmer, I'm feeling that Hans Zimmer is hungry, needs fiber.
Oh, specifically fiber.
Yeah, I can feel that. Very empathic.
Does that mean, will you eat fiber now? Or is that just something you can, that feeling of needing fiber, you know that's not yours.
I'll eat fiber in solidarity. I'll eat, you know, I'm always having garbanzo beans. I love garbanzo beans.
A good feta salad with garbanzo beans. Oh, Greek salad. Yeah. That's what I meant. Greek salad with feta and garbanzo beans. I had that for dinner last night.
Oh, good. Yeah, when you're living life on the road, it's better to have things that aren't perishable. So I'm having cans. I'm having space food. I'm having chips. I'm having Gatorades.
And the entire day, you're on your own. Silence.
Silence. No music.
Are you saying that?
Yeah.
Are you saying that out loud?
At all the drive. No music. No music.
Okay, so it's not silence.
Okay. No. That's true. There's just no music allowed. The silence is the no music. I love to talk to myself. I always say yourself is the best company because all you got is you.
Yeah. Well, that's so true. You're the only person that you spend the whole life with, you know?
That's true. That's very true.
Hans, I know you've had some kind of challenging experiences being the fraternal twin brother of someone who's so undeniably successful. Where are you with yourself right now?
You know, I'm trying to come to terms. Things don't shit the way they used to.
Things don't sit
the way they used to.
It does sound like you're saying shit.
Listen to me close.
Yeah.
Things don't sit. Shit. Things don't sit the way they used to.
Well, the first time you said it just now, it sounded more like sit. But then the second two times, it had more of that shh sound. Okay. And it did sound more, actually, each time you said it, it sounded successively more and more like shit.
Well, let me say it three times quick, and then you can discern which thing I mean. Things don't shit the way they used to. Things don't shit the way they used to. Things don't shit the way they used to.
They all sounded like shit to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Things don't shit the way they used to because I need more fiber.
Yeah, I like that expression. I think it's kind of original because people would think you're saying sit.
Sit.
Yeah.
People would think I'm saying shit, but I'm actually saying shit.
Yeah. Your accent is a fun one. Do you ever get that?
I get that all the time. You know, yeah, I get that all the time from passersby and from anybody, from children who can hear me in the Dark Knight soundtrack. They're always saying, I love your voice. That's why if you want to show your daughter the movie, let me know what she thinks. Give her my business card and ask her if she's in the market for a car with a K.
You know, I'm not going to show her the movie. I think it would be really traumatic for her to watch this movie. I think she's too young. But I really do. I am kind of enamored by the fact that you're able to kind of have a secret language to only kids under five. It'd be cool if you put it in a different place where it would feel right and appropriate for kids to be watching or listening the thing that you're putting that message into.
No, I get it. You don't want to shit her down and have her watch the movie. And that's totally fine.
Yeah. Listen, Pons, I am so grateful for you spending the time with us. What's your, as a last question, what are you excited about? We do Rosebud and Thorn for at dinner. And what's your bud? What's the thing that you are excited about?
The thing that I am most excited about is I am driving to the Grand Canyon today.
Oh, great. Okay, more of your RV trip.
Yes, I'm in Williams, Arizona, and I'm going to make my way up north to the Grand Canyon. And I'm going to get into that canyon and I'm going to go echo. Oh, and then probably echo, echo, echo. And in a way, isn't that music?
Oh, it sure is. It's the music of nature.
And I would say my thorn is my fucking brother who took my whole life away from me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Again, I am so sorry that this kind of potentially brought up some challenging things for you to face. And it does look like you're experiencing what most would consider as a sadness or crying or the feeling that you have coming out of your eyes, that the moisture. But it looks like you swallowed it down again and you're rehydrated.
I'm no longer a human raisin.
You do look different.
Thank you.
Pons, thank you so much for... good. Yeah. That's helpful for the elasticity. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. And best of luck. I can't wait for you to get to the Grand Canyon.
Oh, thank you. I'm very much looking forward to it. All the best, and relay my information to your daughter.
Sure. I'll do that. Bye, Pons.
Bye.
Wow. There's another incredible episode on the books. Thanks for joining us. And thank you to our guests, Hallie Haas, Hannah Pilkus, and Mickey Cathers.
Bye-bye now.
See ya. Okay, thanks. Bye. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, with Stephen Levinson, and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bolin, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Radner. And distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Additional editing by Andrew Lynn and Sunita Haberline. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025. Novelizers, LLC.